East Texas News Roundup is a weekly review of the news in five Southeast Texas counties covered by Polk County Publishing Company newspapers, including Tyler, Polk, Trinity, San Jacinto, and Houston counties, by the editors of those five newspapers. News Director Valerie Riddell and Polk County Publishing General Manager Kelly Barnes lead off this week's podcast with news from Polk County.
Hey folks, this is Valerie Riddell with the Polk County Enterprise, and I'm joined by our General Manager, Kelly Barnes. Say hi, Kelly.
Good morning, everyone.
Whether it's morning, evening, middle of the night, hope you're having a good day. And I'm going to hand off my roundup duties to Kelly because Crime Behind the Pine Curtain is taking up so much time, I'm having a hard time juggling both. So given the Polk County news in a nutshell, we're recording this on World Down Syndrome Day, and we want to give a shout out to all of our homies with an extra chromy, to reminding everybody to be kind to people no matter what their abilities are, and we're trying to share the awareness of stamping out the R word.
I like that. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's demeaning and bullying to kind of say that, even though that word has been almost a medical term, it's not an accurate description. So let's replace that word with respect as an R word.
That's a good idea.
Sully Drake is one of our little friends who lives with Down syndrome. I know that there are many, many other great people in the neighborhood. So just give them a little hug. They're a great part of our community. And another thing we have going on in Polk County is the Trinity Natchez Livestock Show.
Oh, I'm sure people are going to go see that. That sounds
right,
like a good
time. The auction is Friday night. They serve a meal before. So go out and register as a buyer. Maybe you can throw those kids a little add-on money, and we'll be wrapping that up in the print and online editions of the Enterprise in the next week or so. Good luck to all the kids who are showing. And Kelly's going to tell us about other big news that's affecting our business community.
Well, I'm just looking at our page one top story, and it talks about what's happening with Alabama Cushata and their Noskala Gaming. As many of you know, have been following this over the years. The tribe has been adding a lot to our communities and the surrounding areas. If I read correctly in the story, there's 371 full-time jobs that will be affected if they have to close. And my understanding is that they've lost their most recent petition, and now the case is moving to the entire Fifth Circuit. Is that correct, Valerie?
Right. It was a three-judge panel that decided that basically they were not complying with a Texas law against gaming. And at the heart of this is kind of a fundamental fairness issue, that the state of Texas gets to gamble through the lottery, and most other nonprofits can have bingo and things like that. But the Alabama Cushata tribe, who is a great neighbor and partner to everybody in Polk County, of those 371 jobs, about a third of those are members of the tribe, and the other 200 or so are folks in the surrounding Polk County, Tyler County area.
Yes, and I got a chance to actually speak with Greg, who's been covering the story right for years, as you have, the editor here and at the Enterprise, and he was just explaining to me that this particular law only affects two Indian tribes in the whole United States.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting. And I asked him specifically, you know, a judge can't have personal feelings. I feel like this is a bad thing for them. I wish we could change it. A judge just has to make a decision based on the law. So I asked him, is this cut and dried? Are we assuming that they're going to lose again? And he said, no, there is gray area here. It's gray area. And there is still hope that they might be successful. But just as a general person who lives in the community and knows people out there and knows people that work there and benefit from the fact that they've blessed our community with a lot of revenue, I just think it's a raw deal for them.
It really is. And one other tribe in the Eagle Pass area, they get to have full Vegas-style gambling. And one of the issues with our neighbors is that there's an active lobbying effort against them by some of the people who operate casinos in Louisiana.
Oh, that is interesting. And the judges are from Louisiana.
Yes,
also.
And this is being heard in New Orleans. So we hope it'll go a little better. And at the same time, Congressman Brian Babin has filed a bill in the U.S. Congress to resolve some inconsistencies in federal law that will allow the tribe to continue operating at Scylla.
So I have a question.
Okay.
And I don't know if we know the answer, but maybe you do. I had heard about that, and I was really excited that he was being forward on that. Mm-hmm. But my question is it going to happen in enough time to keep them from shutting down before? I understand now mm-hmm. they get to stay open mm-hmm. until the full Fifth Circuit in New right. Orleans gets to hear it and make a decision. But if, in fact, they do have to shut down, how long would they have to be shut down before this bill that Brian Babin is proposing would help them and allow them to open again?
Well, it's really curious. Theoretically, a bill can go through quickly. I mean, when we see disaster relief and other things like that, Congress can move quickly, and it would be up to, if it could get through the House, then it has to get through the Senate. I haven't even heard how our senators are on it. I mean, our Texas Senator John Cornyn is the one who shut him down the first time. So I don't know how he would vote.
That's what I was going to say. Do we know if he's changed his position? Because a lot of people have changed their position since the 90s when all of this started.
Right. And I think he is a stickler for the law and the way the law is written. It says both ways.
I mean, he was trying to not be emotional. He was
right,
trying to just
right, just when you look at the paperwork. But the Texas Constitution is not like the federal Constitution. It's a mess. We have had millions and millions of amendments. And at one place, you have the documents where Sam Houston sat down with the Indians and they made an agreement that, yeah, we're going to give y'all this section of land and this is how we're going to go forward. And then every other tribe was kind of treated a little differently in the United States. So it would just be nice if they could just sit down and iron out that inconsistency, because the Alabama Coushatta have been great neighbors to the rest of us Europeans who moved in later. And we want to continue that relationship because it is to everybody's benefit. They wrote a check for $1 million for Harvey relief. Mm-hmm. Immediately, the tribal council sits down and cuts a check, and it goes much better than waiting for FEMA or anything else.
Well, just a kind of a final thought from me. I was just thinking about the reality of if they close, mm-hmm. no one's going to stop going to do this sort of activity because there's a lot of people that right. enjoy going as a fun thing to do. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to go across over to Louisiana. So mm-hmm. it would, in fact, benefit Louisiana if they close. And that's sad to me. And it's kind of right. Concerning right. that the decision's going to be made there. So I really hope that Brian Babin's bill will actually be effective. And is there anything our listeners can do to help? Brian already is on board,
right.
so calling him's not necessarily the thing to do, but is there
right.
anything?
If you visit supportnescylla.com, I don't remember if it's .com or .org, I'm sorry, but Google Support Nescylla, and they have a list of people you can contact that would show congressmen in Washington how much we support this, how vital a resource this is for people in our community. Because if you look around on the weekdays at the people who are in Nescylla, a lot of these are people who don't have much opportunity for entertainment. So maybe they're sitting there with their $10 or $20 and making it last all day long, but they have access to it. I mean, a lot of these people are in a wheelchair or on oxygen or something like that, that just the fact that they can get out of the house is a benefit to them.
Yes, and there's no alcohol involved here,
right,
too.
No which alcohol.
Which is not something that you get when you go over to Louisiana. I mean, this
right.
is kind of a cleaned-up version of what
right, and it is small stakes, large, you know, mostly, and all of the smokers are herded into one part of the casino.
So, that's true.
Or the entertainment center, I'm sorry. But I think it's a big win. I know that there are people who are just have a very strong moral opposition to gaming, but we're not asking them to. And otherwise, a lot of this same population, we're going to have the charter buses back meeting everybody at Walmart and driving them to Louisiana. So
that's so true. Okay, well, this was fun. So I guess I'll talk to everybody next week.
Right. Next week, Kelly will be here handling the news, and I'll probably give her a little tip sheet, stop in online and get a copy of the Enterprise, and you can catch up on everything else. And we'll see y'all next week.
Howdy, everybody. Chris Edwards here, bringing you the news and events from Tyler County, from the pages of the Tyler County Booster. In a rounded up fashion, Dogwood Festival is upon us, and that is a sure sign that spring is in the air in Tyler County. This coming weekend, we've got the Festival of the Arts, which takes place out at Heritage Village, and it's going to be going Saturday and Sunday, and As is tradition with the Festival of the Arts out there, you've got a good variety of demonstrators, everything from soap making and chair caning to the blacksmithing, and at least I think the blacksmith is going to be out this year. But you've also got a lot of live music on the schedule, and Sunday is the big Dinner of the Grounds event, and that's always a treat. There's going to be a lot of good food out there, and there's also live music Sunday as well. So come on out to that if you're able to. It's a lot of fun for the whole family. And if you're interested in procuring tickets for the Dinner on the Grounds celebration, we've got those available here at the Booster office for $10 a piece. And also, you can get them at the gate out there Sunday. Runs from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. is when they're serving the food. But the overall shindig, though, for both days is 9 a.m. until 5, the usual hours of operation for the village during the weekend. So yeah, Festival of the Arts this weekend. And then next weekend is the Big Western Weekend. So you've got the Western Weekend Parade as well as the Lions Club Rodeo to follow and the Western Weekend Dance. And then, of course, the final installment on that trilogy is the Dogwood Queens Weekend, which is the first weekend in April, which you've got the Dogwood Parade and the crowning of the new Dogwood Queens. It's a lot of fun coming up these next 3 weekends here in Tyler County for the Dogwood Festival. So if you're a longtime Tyler Countyan, come on out and join in the festivities in Woodville. And if you want to come out and take part in it, we'd be honored to have you down for part of the celebration. And a lot of fun, a lot of good eats, a lot of cool things to see, and a lot of neat trinkets and things to buy, especially this weekend with the Festival of the Arts. You've got opportunities to buy everything from handmade jewelry to quilts to handmade furniture, all kinds of stuff, and paintings and things like that. So yeah, come on out to Tyler County and have some fun at one or all of our weekends during the Dogwood celebration. Along those lines, part of the Dogwood Festival celebration is traditionally there's always somebody named as representative of the spirit and quality of leadership and just the overall feel of the area. It's typically a Mr. East Texan that's named. It's always, as long as I can remember, it's always been Mr. East Texan. But this year for Dogwood, we have Miss East Texan has been named. So kudos to everybody who makes those decisions on breaking that glass ceiling. And that person is Judge Delinda Gibbs Walker, who represents Judicial District 1A, which represents Jasper, Newton, and Tyler counties. And if you pick up the booster this week, she's got a little profile in there and that achievement of being named Miss East Texas. So congratulations to Judge Walker, and also kudos to the Dogwood committees for nominating a woman this time and naming her as such. Moving right along and kind of away from the realm of azaleas and dogwood and their beauty, the top story this week in the booster had to do with Woodville School District. And just this past Monday, the superintendent, Glenn Connor, signed two memorandums of understanding with two colleges, with Stephen F. Austin State University, my alma mater, Axum Jacks, and also with Lamar Institute of Technology. And the memorandum of understanding has to do with a program that they're trying to get off the ground that presents an academy kind of situation where high school students from Tyler, Jasper, and Newton counties will be able to take part in an academy that offers dual credit classes. Now, most of the high schools in the area already offer dual credit concurrent courses for college and high school credit, but this is a different situation. Instead of being online learning kind of situations, this is going to be represent a true college type situation, according to Mr. Connor, where students will be able to go and take college classes in actual college classrooms. Now, this program is still very much in its infancy, and there's still a lot of logistics to be worked out. But Mr. Connor said in all of his years of education, this is potentially the best thing that he has seen for students in the area to get them ready for college level work. And in addition to that, the students who participate could possibly obtain an associate's degree before they graduate high school with the number of classes that are offered. So it sounds like a win-win, and there's a long way to plan and a lot of things to do to get to that level to where this is brought to fruition. But it looks like a really good thing for area high school students. So kudos to Woodville ISD and the other schools in the area for supporting this, and kudos also to all of those who have been involved in the planning stages thus far. So it looks like good things are on the horizon. All right, in other news, there was a ribbon cutting celebration that I got to attend last week, last Friday, out in Danby. And a lot of local dignitaries there and law enforcement, a lot of representatives from the Tyler County Sheriff's Department were out there. And what it was there was a substation open for the Sheriff's Department out in Danby, which out actually in the Town Bluff area, right across from the fire station. And what this is this was really spearheaded by the Danby Community Watch Group, and they're doing a lot of great things out there. So if you live in the Danby area, you're probably aware of what they've been doing for the last couple of years, but they're doing a lot of good out there, so you ought to check that out. They were able to renovate this old storage building that was formerly used by the fire station there and turn it into basically a kind of a base of operations on the road for any law enforcement officers who happen to be in the area and might need a place to sit down and do anything from take a little nap to get them some coffee or warm up a meal or get a shower or whatever have you. Or, you know, it offers a workstation where they can process paperwork, a lot of things. So that's going to be a really good thing for our law enforcement in the area and also for the Danby community. So kudos to the Danby Community Watch Group for putting that together, for making that happen, as well as the Tyler County Sheriff's Department for their cooperation in it. And to all of the elected officials who came out to celebrate with them, everybody from our district attorney, Lucas Babin, to our county judge, Jacques Blanchette, our sheriff, Brian Weatherford, who said a few words at the event, put it best when he said, "It is truly a partnership that everybody involved, from the residents of the community to the community watch group who have stepped up to the plate to make it a better place to live, to the elected officials, it's all a cooperative effort. It's all teamwork. And that sort of thing is the result of that partnership and that commitment to teamwork." So very good. So anyways, I hope everybody is enjoying our transitioning into spring. I think all the nastiness and cold has left us behind, and the azaleas and dogwoods are blossoming, and their beauty will be a quick-lived thing, but enjoy it while it's out there. And with all of that, I bid you all adieu. Thanks for listening to the East Texas News Roundup. And again, my name is Chris Edwards with the Tyler County Booster. And as always, be good to yourselves and to one another, and have a great rest of the week and a safe and fun weekend. Later.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Jacob McAdams, the editor of the San Jacinto News Times, and I'm bringing you up to date on all of our most recent news. And we had a quiet week last week, but there are some events that I can get y'all caught up on. We had a city council meeting that happened on the 6th, which was a little bit early than what they normally have their meetings. They would have had their meeting last week, but because last week was also spring break, they decided to move their meeting up. But I did get some information, followed up with the members of City Hall to get some information on that. And City Council has approved a grant project which will involve building a basin at the sewer plant. And the idea is they're wanting the sewer plant to help with infiltration whenever they have some heavy rain. Basically, it's going to let the city of Shepherd hold the rain until the city has time to process it. Instead of just dumping it all out, they can do it in increments. Also, Mayor Charles Minton is looking into the possibility for bond elections. City Council approved this, and the idea is they're looking for ways to fund certain infrastructure projects. And what they're hoping to fund are some upgrades to the water lines and sewer lines, as well as doing some work on some street projects. We also, of course, this past week had St. Patrick's Day, and the Nixon Adult Daycare Center celebrated St. Patrick's Day on the 15th because the holiday, of course, fell on Sunday, so they wanted to do it early during their opening hours. Now, if you're not familiar with Nixon Adult Daycare Center, they're located in Shepherd on North Byrd Avenue. And they're actually not too far from the Impact Center, which is actually across the street from them. But Nixon Adult Daycare Center, as the person who's over it, Audrey DeVore, as she puts it, it's Shepherd's best kept secret. It's a place that provides supervision for seniors and adults that have physical and mental disabilities. And they do a lot to really engage everyone there. If you have a child, which I say child, but of course they may be young adults at this point, that are dealing with disabilities, and again, whether they're physical or mental, you can take them to Nixon Adult Daycare Center, and they're open from 7:30 to 5. They're provided two meals and a snack, and they engage in activities, they go on field trips, they just do a lot to have fun, they teach the adults, they teach them skills and whatnot, and they do a lot to really get them involved in the world. Also to give parents peace of mind whenever they have to send their child essentially to one of these places. They send them here as opposed to just leaving them at home where they might get hurt or something, or they're not sure how things will go when they're by themselves. But that's where Nixon Adult Daycare Center comes in. It just offers that sort of peace of mind. Now on St. Patrick's Day, they had Will Cox of Wilcox Roofing. He's from Cleveland. He came out and he performed songs. He sang Achy Breaky Heart and some other songs for them. And all the residents, they were dancing to it. And some of them were, you know, having a nice lunch with chili dogs. And of course, everyone was wearing green and they were just enjoying and having a good time. They serve everyone in Liberty, San Jacinto, Walker, and Polk counties. So they have a pretty large area of coverage for this area. So it's not just San Jacinto County or Shepherd. But if you'd like some more information, you can go online to nixonhomecare.org. And if you'd like to get a hold of the Shepherd area where they are branched out in, that number is 936-628-1200. Outside of this event, we also just recently had another interesting event here in Shepherd over at the Shepherd Public Library on March 19th. The library hosted Peggy Stern and Danielle Reich, and the two performed music from throughout the decades through the 30s, the 40s, the 50s. I think they went all the way up to the 70s. Peggy Stern is a pianist, and Danielle Reich, she was playing on a drum while also singing. Danielle Reich is actually a professional opera singer who has performed in New York, and they entertained the group for about an hour over at Shepherd Public Library, and they even got the people that were there engaged as well to perform. They sang along to some of the songs that they had. The pair actually performed again today on March 20th at the Cold Spring Senior Center, and they appear to be traveling around. I'm not sure where they're going or where they were planning to go after that, but they were just kind of going around. They were, I guess, on tour, and it was a nice little performance to watch on at the library. And we had another interesting event. Now, this is more in the Livingston area, but I thought I'd bring it up in case parents or young adults have some interest in this. But Livingston Municipal Library actually hosted an event on March 11th and on Friday, March 15th, I believe that is. And what they did was they had a guy named Michael Durham come down to the library, and he is a professional game master. And so what he did is he engaged some younger children. I think the youngest one was about 10 years old, but also some older, like teenagers, young adults and whatnot, and taught them how to play Dungeons & Dragons. And of course, Dungeons & Dragons is the long-running tabletop RPG that's popularized that concept in particular. Michael Durham, along with Rebecca Isley, who is the children's coordinator at the library, they're hoping to start a Dungeons & Dragons club down at the Livingston Municipal Library. And so it's something that if you want to get your kids engaged in other activities, it's one that they might be interested in. What makes Dungeons & Dragons different from other games is that you're playing a role. It's almost like acting in a way that, yes, it is a game, but you're still acting it out. But also, it's not a competitive game. It's not like Monopoly or chess or checkers or like many games where you're trying to compete and be the best. You want to win the game. You want to beat everyone else out. It's a more cooperative style game. And so it's, as Michael Durham himself put it, it's cooperative storytelling. And their possibilities with this sort of thing are just limitless. So be sure to check it out at the Livingston Municipal Library. That we don't know if they are going to get the club finalized or not, or if they do, what dates they are trying to set it up for. But just keep your ears open and contact the library and ask them more about it if you want some information on it. Now, that pretty much covers what we have going on these past few days. But Everyone should keep their eyes and ears open because soon we are going to have opening day for our youth leagues. So our Shepherd Youth League, our Cold Spring Dixie League that's out here. So on the 23rd, bear in mind, we will have parades going on. Well, that's all we got over here at San Jacinto County and a little bit of Livingston as well. And we hope to hear from y'all again soon. Have a good one, everyone.
Howdy, y'all. Megan Whitworth here with your update on Houston County. First of all, I just got to say we are loving the warmer weather, the sunny days, and blue skies. Today, I even got to enjoy a cherry snow cone. It was the best part of my week so far, so I am definitely loving and looking forward to summer, but I will enjoy spring with the blooms and pretty days. So let's dive in into the news of Houston County. First of all, there was more information released on the Tadmore murder. And just to back up and do a little summary catch-up of when that happened. So early February, on February 1st, the Houston County Sheriff's Office received a call about a body that was found with multiple gunshot wounds on near the Tadmore area of Houston County, which is located near Ratcliffe, which is just about 4 miles from Kennard. The body belonged to 24-year-old Kadarius Williams of Lufkin. And within 72 hours, the law enforcement discovered a connection between Tyron Dwayne Mark and the alleged murder. Mark is 48 and he's also of Lufkin. And just more information was released because there was missing connections when it first came out with law enforcement doing the active investigation of how did they make this connection and how did it all come together. So it was reported that Mark's vehicle was located through surveillance video at a local business in the Tadmore area. The next day, on February 2nd, Mark fled from investigators and the Lufkin Police Department officers in a vehicle chase. And Mark eventually was stopped and he was there taken into custody after the vehicle pursuit for evading arrest. A search warrant was obtained and executed at his residence in Lufkin, and a .40 caliber handgun was recovered at his residence, and the ammunition in the handgun located at the suspect's home was the same as the ammunition that was found in the scene of the murder. In addition, it was reported that a search warrant was obtained to seize Mark's vehicle, which was a 2011 Lincoln, and the tires of the vehicle matched the tread of the tires found at the scene of the crime. It was also learned through the investigation that a family member had purchased the gun or the caliber ammunition days prior to the murder for Mark and at his request. And there are also witnesses who stated that Mark and Williams had issues getting along. On February 3rd, the next day, that was a Friday, Saturday, and the Sunday, Mark was arrested in Lufkin, and he has been holding at the Lufkin, in Lufkin at their jail. And then on March 13th, he was arrested and charged with murder and booked into the Houston County Jail. That's just crazy. But it's great to see law enforcement working so fast and working so together, because it was Alto Police Department, Houston County Sheriff Office deputies, and Lufkin PD, among other law enforcement, that worked together to obtain this case. And all of this is alleged because you're proven innocent until guilty. My prayers and well wishes are definitely with Williams' family with all of that going on. I know it's not a fun trip right now. So this week on our front page, I dived into road issues in the Crockett area. So I sat down a couple weeks ago with Crockett Streets Supervisor Larry Pierce, and I also sat down with City Administrator John Ingerstein to talk about what they're doing to better the roads in Crockett. And I know even in Houston County, there are some of the worst roads I've ever driven on. Matter of fact, a few weeks ago, just to dive more into the roads condition of Houston County, I met with a woman who lives out in the country on dirt roads. And so I have a little red car and she wouldn't allow me to come past a further point because I would have gotten stuck. So I was super grateful after driving. She had a huge truck that we got in that she was able to go over the terrain that she wanted to get stuck. And just to see some of these conditions, it's awful, and I hate that people have to drive. So just to tackle this one issue, I sat down with Larry Pierce and Mr. John Ingerstein to talk about what they're doing in Crockett to help the residents not to drive on such roads full of potholes and does not have a good foundation. And it was a fresh breath air to see Larry and John admit that there have been years of neglect on these roads, and they're actually trying to do something about it now. The headline for this, I quoted Mr. Pierce, it says, "We've got to do something." And that is how they both felt. So Mr. Pierce took over the street supervisor position last fall, and Mr. Ingerstein has been in the position for about 2 years. And within those couple of months and a couple of years, they're definitely making an improvement. In 2016, when John came into the position, the streets department only had about a $60,000 budget. And with that, he was like, there was no chance to, maybe some potholes were able to get filled, but really there was nothing that they could do with that amount of money, just fixing potholes. And he was like, that's just a Band-Aid, and it's not a very good Band-Aid. So since then, he has worked with the city council to increase the roads budget to up to $200,000. And they're also working on getting grants to get more money to help pay for better roads. And Mr. Pierce, his crew team are 5 people. And he said about every day they're able to have 2 crews go out and start working on different roads here in Crockett. And really, that's a very small crew to get so many roads. And actually, there are 42 miles of city-owned streets here in Crockett. That's a little over 100 streets that the crew is working on. And so really, it is a long process, and it can be tedious to do these small things. But these two guys, just talking to them, they were really dedicated on making an improvement here in Crockett. These two guys, they also expressed their gratitude for the residents for being so patient. Mr. Ingerstein said for the most part that people have just been patient, and they're now seeing that workers are working to get the roads to be fixed and to have a better drive for the everyday person. And I loved at the very end, I said, I asked John Larry, I said, hey, in 10 years, where do you hope, like, what is your view, your direction that you want to see this all going in? And Mr. Ingerstein said, we will be in a better place than we are today. And Larry said, I would like to drive down smooth roads around here. I'm going to do it one way or the other. And that is a quote that Larry had said earlier in the interview. He said, one way or the other. So Crockett residents, just in talking with Mr. Pierce and Mr. Ingerstein, I was able to just feel confident in the path that they are going in, the direction, a vision, and the hard work that they are doing. It's definitely showing improvement in the budget, and Mr. Ingerstein is definitely looking for ways to save money, put it back into the streets budget so that drivers can have a better experience of driving on the roads in Crockett. And definitely next we are going to tackle with the county roads and hopefully talk with the commissioners and see what they're doing to help better the roads and why some of these roads are so bumpy and so, I don't even know. I've always lived in a city, so I've never really realized what people in the country have to do sometimes for these roads that they drive on. So hopefully, Houston County residents, we can get some answers for you. Election season is coming up, and we are doing a little look at the candidates. We are doing a 2-part series. Well, Mr. Alton Porter, legendary reporter, is doing the 2-part series on the candidates here in Houston County. His first series did, he tackled the candidate for the Houston County Hospital District Board election. And that will be a very, very hotly contested race. It's already blown up Facebook with what candidates are promising this and that and what they stand for, different goals and visions. So definitely check that out. That's all on page 1A, and it tackles on page 6A. And in that read, you will definitely learn about the different candidates, what they are wanting and why they are running. So definitely check that out. In the next series, we are tackling the Crockett City Council elections, which are also very hotly contested this year, and just the other elections going on in Houston County on May 4th. And definitely get out there and register to vote so you can voice your opinion. These elections are the time that we are able to use our voice. No matter what your opinions are, I respect it. Especially as a reporter, I sit on the fence on every election. And I want to hear why you're going out to vote, who you're going out to vote, and why it's important. I remember the first time as an 18-year-old, why I went to go vote, and how important it felt to cast my vote for president. and to get out there and to really show the support for my candidates. And this is the time of year you can do that. So county residents, East Texas residents, go out there, register to vote. If you're registered, go encourage people to and encourage people to share their opinion and to voice it, because it really does matter. Alrighty, there's also quite a few features in this issue. We had a Crockett native, Reverend Harold Todd, who recently returned from a 10-day mission trip to Kenya. And that is incredible. I've always wanted to go on a mission trip to like Haiti or somewhere in like in a third world country to help others. So definitely take a read of that. It begins on page 1A and goes to 8A. And then we are also featuring the Uganda's Watoto Children's Choir that came to Crockett last Friday at the First United Methodist Church. And this was the second time that they came to Crockett. And Alton Porter took some marvelous pictures and wrote a beautiful story about this beautiful choir of children, of orphan children who share their faith through music and ministering. So definitely check that out. That is on 8B. And we'll post more photos on Facebook. And then lastly, in the last couple of issues, we have discussed with DETCOG about the home internet service that they are wanting to improve. And they are holding a meeting on March 25th at 9:30 a.m. at the Crockett Housing Authority to talk to residents. These meetings are a part of a broadband internet study the agency is conducting in the region. The meetings are for all interested citizens. And DETCOG especially encourages participation from persons of low to moderate income. And that story is on page 1A and goes to 8A. And you definitely want to come to that to also share your voice and your opinion on what is needed out here in Crockett and Houston County. So once again, that meeting is March 25th. That's Monday at 9:30 a.m. at the Crockett Housing Authority, located at 159 George Briggs in Crockett. So there is a lot in this newspaper. Sports is going on. We have track season coming. More information on basketball, area fishing reports. We have our outdoor section this week with Mr. Matt Williams. We don't always have it in there, but Matt Williams is a fabulous outdoors writer. And with summer and spring here, with fishing season, definitely take a read. There's just a lot in there. Calendar, check it out. There's a lot going on. March 30th, don't forget, we have the Davy Crockett Music and Arts Festival. We also have the CASA Superhero Run happening in Kennard that you don't want to miss out on. So check your local news, the Houston County Courier, for the latest updates. And then next week, we are taking a dive into the Houston County Fair, which is happening the first week in April. So look forward to that. We also have some photos from some FFA competitions that have happened recently, especially in Lovelady. I know some people have been waiting for those pictures, and they will be definitely in the next issue of the Courier. And we are excited. There's a lot going on, so definitely pay attention. Get a snow cone if you want. And just as always, remember to check out our Facebook at HC Courier for the latest updates. We are constantly updating, letting people know what's happening in our office and what's happening in the area. So you don't want to miss out. And always check on our website at hccourier.com. You can subscribe there. You can give us a call. Whatever, we are here for you guys to update you on the news. And lastly, I just want to give a shout out to our cat, Cece. Today is her 9th birthday. And we posted on Facebook a photo of the sweet kitty, and it is going viral. So make sure to check it out on Facebook. And anyways, so next time, we'll see ya. Bye, you guys.
In Trinity County, we just wrapped up the Trinity County Youth Fair and Livestock Show. There's photo spreads on the front page and the back page of the A section. And we will have our special section on the fair in 2 weeks. Our top story is Trinity freshman Kaylin Fisher finishing third in the state in the girls' powerlifting meet. This marks the fourth year in a row that a Trinity athlete has won a state medal at the state powerlifting meet. Also, a pair of Trinity City Councilmen, Billy Gooden and Philip Morrison, are going to remain in their city council seats. They both applied for re-election, and because they did not have anybody opposing them, they will automatically be re-elected into their council seats, and the election has been canceled because there is no opposition. The county commissioners approved a pair of items at the commissioners' court meeting on March 12th. One of them is to reduce the speed limit in the Creekside subdivision from 30 miles an hour to 25 miles an hour. And the other one is to revise the plat maps in the Trinity Cove subdivision to make them 911 compliant. And last but not least, congratulations to Joel Santabanez, who graduated from Trinity High School last year. He completed Air Force basic training at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio.